Thorny, as we venture into the R&R, two truths are consistent. We love our dear Montana state, and we love great beer. And you know who else feels the same? Jeremiah Johnson Brewing. Brewed in the heart of Montana in downtown Great Falls, Jeremiah Johnson takes Montana's finest ingredients to craft some of Montana's favorite beers. And now, Jeremiah Johnson's second tap room is open in downtown Coeur d'Alene. Their Citra IPA is probably one of my favorites. But we all know, Thorny, you're not the hop lover I am. You're more of a mountain man Scotch ale.
Well, Foley, I'm certainly not a mountain man, but you are right. I do love their mountain man Scotch ale. But come game day, you and I are both cracking their Golden Bobcat Pale Ale. So when you're looking for a quality craft beer brewed with Montana roots, a relaxing tap room, or just a six-pack to take to your favorite Bobcat tailgate, Jeremiah Johnson delivers. Make your next beer a Jeremiah Johnson, and as always, go Cats. Man, we could sit here and talk Bobcat football with you forever, Bill. It's been fun.
Oh, this is great, man. You're bringing back some great memories. You guys do some pretty impressive research. This is a lot of fun.
Welcome, everybody, to the R&R CatCast, a fan-based podcast focusing on Montana State athletics. We're two dudes named Ryan from the state of Washington talking about our dear Montana State. We hope you enjoy. Welcome back, Bobcat fans. Thorny and I are excited to share our interview with Senior Sports Information Director and Master Storyteller, Bill Lamberty.
Yes, we recorded that interview with Bill back on June 30th. I mentioned that only because we did talk a little bit about COVID and the upcoming football season and how that would impact it. So the information may be a little bit dated, even though nothing has changed since then. But you are right. He is a master storyteller. And it was a lot of fun sitting down with him to talk about his stories from his nearly four decades at MSU. And man, Foley, what did you think of just his ability to just remember people, players, eras of Bobcat football and Bobcat athletics?
Oh, I'm definitely envious. You and I have trouble remembering players two years ago. Bill can remember players 27 years ago and scores and people and just his wealth of knowledge. It's just so fun to sit and listen to the interview we had, and no doubt the Bobcat fans are going to enjoy this one.
Yeah, and just before we get into anything else, I just want to once again thank Bill for being a supporter of our podcast, and it means a lot to us, and he's been really kind to us, and for that, I think alone, he deserves some thanks. And again, just a fun interview, and you guys will definitely enjoy it.
But before we get into that, we have a special announcement. Just recently, the R&R was fortunate enough to partner with Jeremiah Johnson Brewing out in the Great Falls, Montana.
Yeah, you may have seen on Twitter, if you follow us on Twitter, or if you listened to our last episode with Joe DeLeon and Sean Anderson of the Believe Sports Network, that yes, we have partnered with Jeremiah Johnson, and we're really excited about it because, well, number one, they're a great brewery, a great Montana company. They make delicious beers, but they have lots of Bobcat roots. They got Great Falls roots. Ryan and I have some Great Falls roots ourselves, and they make the Bobcat Golden Ale. Like, you could almost say that's the official Bobcat beer. I mean, how much better could we find in a sponsor than that?
It's a perfect match for us. Really, it is.
It really is a perfect marriage. So we just want to say we're excited about that. And I hope everyone is excited too. And I hope you give your support to Jeremiah Johnson Brewery as the season progresses.
With that, let's get into our interview with Senior Sports Information Director, Bill Lamberty. Right now, we welcome in Senior Sports Information Director, Bill Lamberty. Bill, it is our absolute pleasure to have you on the CatCast tonight. Thanks for coming on.
Guys, longtime listener, first time caller. It's a thrill.
love it. like Ryan said, thanks again so much for coming on. I just wanted to say that, you know, for our listeners, that Bill's been such a good supporter of our podcast, and we just really appreciate, you know, what, you know, the attention and support that you give just our little venture over here. It means a lot to us, and we just want to say thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fun. You guys do a great job, and it's, you know, every little bit's awesome.
All right, Bill, well, let's get a little bit of background information on you before we get into too much. Where are you originally from?
I was born in Wyoming. My folks moved to their hometown back in Nebraska. So I grew up about 50 miles straight north to Lincoln, and when it came time, I went back to Wyoming to go to college. And I was there from 81, graduated in 86 with a journalism degree. And I got offered the job up here at MSU in the fall of 90 and have been here ever since.
So that kind of segues into our second question, was, is how did you end up at Montana State? And we always ask our players, and now we're going to ask you, Bill, like, what was your journey to Montana State? How did that end up coming about?
Well, I worked in the sports information office at Wyoming for the gold standard in our business, Kevin McKinney. He's the best there is. And I worked for him as a student for 2 years, and then they hired me on for my first job. And that was, you know, as lucky a break as I've ever had. So I spent 4 years in the office as a full-time assistant SID. And in the interim, in those 5 or 6 years when I worked in the office, if you know the name Arnie Scalio, you probably are really out in the weeds in college athletics, but he was the SID for the Big Sky Conference in the 80s and 90s. And he was a Wyoming grad, and he was actually Montana State's SID in from 76 to 78. Hmm. So some strong ties to Arnie, but he came back and visited. He knew Kevin and some of the different people in Laramie. And so he'd come back in the summer and visit from time to time. So I got to know him a little bit. And when this job came open, he called and asked if I was interested. And I said, sure. And so he, you know, got me on the fast track, and Bruce Parker, I think, was really the driving force in getting me hired. And so here I am.
And Wyoming, that's just kind of a unique college experience, like an athletic program. Is there anything really like it in the country, just kind of being the only real, you know, big time college in the state?
Yeah, it's a really interesting setup in terms of education in the state. You know, they've got the satellite junior college campuses that all feed into the 4-year university. So it's just a really good, efficient setup. But I was really fortunate to be there in the 80s because in the early part of the decade, the basketball team was really cooking with Jim Brandenburg. And then, of course, in the mid 80s, we got to the NIT Final Four 1 year, the Sweet 16 the next, and then back to the tournament and upset by Loyola Marymount with Gathers and, you know, that crew the year after that. So really saw some amazing things in basketball. And then on the football side in 87, well, in 86, we hired Dennis Erickson, and he was there for about 11 months and moved on back to Washington State. And then we hired a guy named Paul Roach, who actually Paul Roach hired Paul Roach because he was our athletic director. And he'd been an assistant coach at Wyoming in the 60s and had been an NFL assistant. He was with John Madden. He actually had a funny story. He had to sit next to Madden on the flight back from the Immaculate Reception game because he was the rookie coach on the staff. And he was Bart Starr's offensive coordinator. So he was an amazing guy. And his first 2 years, we went 8-0 in the WAC. So an amazing run there, and played Thurman Thomas, played Barry Sanders in a bowl game. I mean, just really a fun time to be down there because I got to see some amazing things and work with just really awesome people. And then, you know, getting this job and moving up here in the 90s, it was a little bit of a, you know, downswing to be in Bobcat Athletics. Football program was trying to get its footing again. And the, you know, the basketball program, Mick Durham had just taken over as the head coach. And so, you know, that was a slow building process, but finally got to where we wanted to be. And so then in the mid 90s, you know, things started cooking here, and football eventually got up and going in the 2000s when Crame showed up, and you know, it's just been a lot of fun ever since.
I have to ask. So you said Paul Roach basically hired himself, right? He was athletic director.
He did. Yeah. Yeah.
So what was he just sitting there looking at the football record? Like, you know what, if you want a job done right, it's like, and I'll just go be the coach.
It's funny. The funny thing is he was hired. He was a player agent, an NFL player agent in Denver. And you know, making a pretty good living, but our Booster Club executive director job opened and we hired him. So he came to Laramie in about 85 as the Booster Club director and really implemented some good things. And we made some great progress. And then the AD at the time was Gary Cunningham, and who you might know from UCLA basketball. And so he got the AD job at UCSB. And because things were kind of rolling and Paul was doing a good job with the Booster Club, he was hired as the athletic director. And he was, I think he was only in that job as a year, for a year. He hired Dennis, and then Dennis left, and we'd kind of been on a kind of running in place because we were a 500 program, and you know, they'd been so good in the 60s and had some turmoil and tumult. And, you know, Paul just thought he was the best guy. Maybe not to, I don't think anybody thought he was going to win the WAC two straight years right out of the gates. But what we were really looking for was some stability. And he was a Laramie guy, a Wyoming guy. And he just was so well connected with the people in the state. And there was just a lot of trust and a high level of comfort. So it was really a weird thing if you were kind of looking in from the outside, but for people in the state, it was a really kind of a positive thing.
Do you still follow Wyoming sports?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah, I do. I'm a proud alum. You bet. I not as closely as, you know, I would if I didn't work in college athletics probably, but, yeah, I keep my eye on them. And my old boss still works there. He's the number two guy in the athletic department and the athletic director I went to college with. And so I've still got friends down there.
That's cool. Well, let's move it back to a little bit about Montana State, just a little bit there. good stuff though, Bill. I love it. Bill, can you just tell us kind of what is your role as a sports information director? What are some of your duties?
My media relations is probably the most sort of nuts and bolts part of the job. And that's managing all the media for the football program, which has just grown so much in my time here. And, you know, I'd worked basketball all those years and finally handed that off to, I've just got a crackerjack young assistant named Andrew Peterson. He does just a phenomenal job, and he took over basketball this year and was just really did a great job. And so I handed that off to him, and that gives me a little more time to kind of work on some big picture things. With as goofy as things went, you know, this year, the last couple months haven't been what I'd hoped they'd be, but it not having basketball allowed me to really work on some media placement, getting stories out there and strategizing a little bit more than I probably would have been able to in the past. And so that's the media relations piece is pretty all encompassing, but credentials, as you guys know, and you know, content on the website. And again, Andrew and Tom Schultz, the other assistant who's actually been here longer than I have. Those two guys, you know, I think we're a really good team because we all have different strengths and the kind of things kind of content we can produce. So, you know, content production for the website and managing, you know, and then we work with our staffs and try to, provide what they need. Each coaching staff's different, you know, from one staff to the next within a sport, they're really different. So, really sort of a lot of different duties as assigned, but to me, media relations is probably the key thing that we hang our hat on.
So of course, one of the big things I assume that would be part of that umbrella would be press conferences.
Press conferences. Yeah. Trying to, create, conduit or you know, interaction zones between the media and the you know, the coaches and the athletes. You know, every coach has his own idea about how much access he wants to provide and different ways he wants to do it. So it's kind of a constant, very fluid situation. But man, I'll tell you, when I got here, we had one TV station in town. Kurt Bushnell was the sports guy, and it was the ABC station. And we had Mike Yowitz and Paul Burns at the Chronicle, and that was it. And, you know, occasionally Scott Manch did a great job from the Tribune. He covered us regularly, and the Gazette was more or less always around. But on a day-to-day basis, you know, it was really light. And now we've got the three TV stations that are here all the time, and Coulter, Nuanez, and Brooks at Skyline Sports covers us, and 406, you know, the Gazette group, they cover us, and the Chronicle has a couple of guys that are really, really thorough and do a good job, and you know, different new media type things like, you know, you guys, and just lots of different, and there's much more of a national FCS scene now than there ever was in the early 90s, you know, with Craig Haley at the Sports Network and Brian Buchanan and Sam Herder. So it's really amazing how the media landscape has changed in the last 20, 30 years.
Well, if you look around the country, there's a lot of programs who would just kill for the kind of media exposure that both the Montana schools really get up here. Just so many different papers, frontline, you know, front page news articles, stuff like that. So, you know, I think we're definitely plenty of programs are envious of the position that we're in. Kind of sticking to the press conference question real quick here. How do you kind of handle maybe the emotions of the coaches and players? Because I imagine they can be pretty up and pretty down. how do you kind of manage that?
You know, it's funny. After games, win or lose, our people right now, the way the program is, are really, really good, very solid. You know, kids obviously process things a little bit differently, but Coach Choate is just, he's really excellent. I mean, he's got a great perspective, and he's a pretty steady guy. And, you know, for as fiery and as emotional and as expressive as he is, just kind of in the course of your regular interactions with him on game day, he's really a sort of a, you know, an oasis of calmness in the middle of the sea. He's really a very composed guy, and that carries over to post game too. Where he gets himself fired up is kind of in those midweek press conferences. We've been doing those on Mondays or Tuesdays.
Yeah. Mondays.
Yeah. Yep. We love them.
Mondays. Yeah.
So we eat that up.
Oh yeah.
He can really, you know, he watches film on Sunday and game plans, and he's with the kids. And by the time Monday rolls around, he's ready to go, and he's clicking on all cylinders, and he's just, you know, I don't know if he really enjoys doing it, but I think it's a good outlet for him. And I think that I think that it's a positive release for him, and he gets going, man. He gives you good information. I really enjoy, listening to him to talk during those things. And then he and I have a couple of things during the week where maybe we'll ride, downtown to a booster thing together or whatever. And I just really enjoy his insight. He's just a really interesting, he uses the, phrase high level of functional intelligence to describe other people, but I'd use that on him. He's just got an amazing level of functional intelligence talking about all kinds of different stuff. So he's a lot of fun, but he can get kind of fired up in those midweek press stuff more than post game or you know, like on a Friday pregame with radio or whatever. He can really get cooking, but the kids, you know, we've just got amazing kids. They're so awesome. And I appreciate all the patience they show, because they're just great at doing the media stuff. And it's a grind, and, you know, it comes in the middle of their school and trying to have a social life and trying to get ready for the next opponent. But they all do a great job, and they suffer me gladly.
So, Bill, do you remember a time maybe when a coach and a media member just didn't see eye to eye? And if you do, did you think it was your job to orchestrate that dance between the coaches and the media?
You know, yeah, I've had a lot of those. And I won't name names, but there was a situation with a football coach and a media member, and it just escalated so quickly. It turned into kind of a behind doors thing that everyone who was in the vicinity heard, but I was kind of helpless to do anything about that one. But there was another coach that just did not get along with his beat writer, and it was 2 years of just taking bullets and trying to make things work. So yeah, to answer your question directly, I've always felt that that was one of the really important things that I need to do, is make the coach comfortable with doing that stuff to the best I can, and still get the media people the information they need the best I can. And I studied journalism when I was in school down there in Wyoming, and one summer I worked as the sports editor of a daily paper down there in Rawlins, and I also worked in radio when I was in school. So I feel like I have a pretty good sense of what those guys need and what they're up against and that sort of thing. So I think that's really helped me. But I just have always felt like making sure that those guys, the beat writers and the primary beat writer, the Chronicle person, and the head coach of whatever sport, can kind of find some room to work with each other. And so that's been, I really do feel that that's an important part of my job.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, I think, gives you a certain advantage being in their shoes, so you can kind of understand both angles of it. And you know, that's got to be just really advantageous for you in your job duties.
Yeah, and I've enjoyed really almost every single media person we've had in town. I've had some sort of rapport and relationship with, and a lot of them, I've kept in touch with some of them, and I really enjoy the guys that are in town now, especially the Chronicle, Colton and Paul at the Chronicle, and Jeff Welsh, 46MT Sports. You know, we had Greg Rockach for a long time, and he's back over in Billings now, and I'm hoping he's over a little bit more during football season. But yeah, good group of people. It's been a lot of fun working with those folks and getting to know them a little. But you know, it can get a little edgy during the season, and mm-hmm. coaches don't like to feel like they're being unfairly dealt with, and it happens. But that's, I really do feel that's an area that experience helps, and 30 years is a fair amount of experience, so that's been to my advantage also.
So we kind of talked about the coaching side, a little bit about the media side, a little bit about the player side. Zach Minner told us that during press conferences that you would allow him to sneak in and grab some pizza during the press conference.
That was the story I was going to tell about him.
Oh, sorry about that.
I really do love that kid. He is so funny. And right from the very, very beginning, he was just such a great, personable, expressive guy. And kids are always coming in and watching extra film. And so he would come, his time would be Tuesdays at about 11:30, 11:45. Coach Beck would get him set up in half the Hall of Fame room, and our pizza lunch was in the other half. So he was on the west side and we were on the east side, which is the side that, closer to the football offices. So those first couple of weeks, Zach would kind of walk back and forth down the hall and look in, and I could just tell. And so I finally told him, Zach, you can come in anytime you want for pizza. I'll order a little extra. All you got to do is, if somebody wants to interview you, you got to interview them. And as you can tell with Zach, he loves to talk, and he's just so personable. And I just love that kid. And it was great to have him back when he was doing that internship with Bethany. But so he would come in every week and grab a piece of pizza.
That's a pretty funny story. And I mean, who can blame him on that one? Pizza right down the hall or whatever. And,
right next door, he could smell it. Oof. And so he was not going to let that opportunity slip away. We had, and that's from the earliest time here until just recently, we had players into that pizza lunch. And so it got to the point in 2003 where we just had to have Travis in every single week, because every week they wanted him. So by golly, for 2 years, that kid came to every single pizza lunch and asked every question. And it was just, I told him when he was done, right after his senior season, I said, you're going to have to come back wherever you're playing next year and have lunch with me on Tuesdays. I'm not going to know what to do.
You must develop a pretty strong bond with a lot of the players that just come through over the years. Like, do you keep in touch with a lot of the guys then? It sounds like you probably do.
Yeah, some of them, sure. It's not a lot, but there are, Jody Owens is one, and I, Zach, I just love Travis. And, you know, through keeping in touch with a few of them, you kind of hear what others are doing and that sort of thing. And so that's been a lot of fun. But the guys, you know, the guys that are really good players early in their career, I need to make them do media, you know, which is at some point gets to be a drag for any kid. But, you know, they just are such good sports about it. And they buy into the fact that it helps them a little get prepared for the real world a little bit. And plus it helps the school. And so it's just been great to have, so many great guys around, but, yeah, you get pretty close to some. The funny thing is that ever since I've been here, we don't let, first year freshmen do interviews. Mm-hmm. And so, I had to get to know Travis a little bit just because people were wanting him and I had to, you know, tell him no. And so I'd kind of, you know, sidle up every once in a while and just remind him, hey, if you get calls from media people, you know, or if people reach out to you,
some random podcast reaches out to you.
And, you know, back then social media wasn't nearly what it is now, but, I mean, we have kids get DM'd by, you know, media all the time that, you know, we just have to work them through, but, work through it with them. But, yeah, it's a much different thing, but the kids that do a lot of media, they get used to having me around.
I bet.
So Bill, you came in at the latter part of Earl Solomson's era, correct?
Right.
So you've seen Solomson, Cliff Heisel, Mike Kramer, Rob Ash, now Jeff Choate. So no doubt you've seen the peaks and the valleys of the program. My question to you would be, where are we at right now?
Where are we at right now? You know, I think right now we have as solid footing and we're on as solid a footing as we ever have been. And I think that the upside is greater than it's ever been since I've been here. And, you know, part of that is, you know, some infrastructure stuff, some stuff that you don't necessarily see and talk about, but we've got just an amazing staff right now. I mean, between Brittany Patera, the nutritionist, and Aaron Grisonic, the student wellness and our academic staff, with Jamie Rizzuto and Rob Higgs and the athletic training staff. And now we've branched out to include, you know, Bozeman Health. And so we have physicians, physical therapists. I mean, I just had no idea that this program could become this in the 90s. You know, we were just struggling to get the football stadium renovated for my first, you know, 6, 7, 8 years here and the field house a little bit. And so, man, just the strides and Jeff Choate has really been amazing. And he's found a great partner in Leon Costello to, you know, kind of build a shared vision that just is really driving this program to heights that, I mean, I'll be honest, I never thought that I'd experience this level of, just to being highly functional and really, servicing the student athletes and helping them in every way possible at this school, because it just, you know, or not even at this school so much, but at this level, because I think what we've got, you know, there are certainly schools like North Dakota State that do amazing, amazing things. But at our level, we're pretty high up there.
So we talked a little bit about, just kind of the arc of the program, and no doubt you've been, I mean, you're just beginning your fourth decade with Montana State. And so you have seen the change of guard in the football program specifically a handful of times now. I mean, kind of tongue in cheek right here, but have you crafted some sort of 12-step program to console the outgoing staff and usher in the new? Like, well, as the sports information director, like how are you helping facilitate that?
Well, it's those have probably been my most awkward moments. You know, when Rob Ash was fired, which you could kind of feel coming in the wind a little bit, but you know, it was still a fairly surprising situation. So I actually had to be the person that went upstairs, and I was sort of the intermediary between the administration and him to see how he wanted it worded, how, you know, resignation, firing, whatever. And so that was, it was like, you know, going between two generals in the bunker, trying to figure out, are we retreat? You know, it was like maybe a little bit like being at Appomattox Courthouse. I don't know, but, some really emotional situations like that. And when, because a lot of these coaches, you know, especially the head coach, I spend so much time with, you know, I'm not necessarily friends with a lot of them, but some of them I am friends with. Mick Durham and Brad Hughes, for sure. Mick, I still keep in real close contact with, and I'm just really glad he's back in the state. It's great to have him so close. So when the time comes, I mean, Mick's retirement press conference was really emotional for me. And some of those, you know, some of those things can be touchy. And it's always, you know, it's so hard with the assistant coaches because they'll, you know, most of them have families, and for them, it's just really uncertain. One of the things I'll always admire about Cliff Heisel, who I had plenty of differences with, but when he decided it was time for him to call it quits, he got every single one of his assistants their next job. And that was just an amazing thing.
Wow.
It took a little while on a couple of them, but all of those guys just did so well in the business after they left MSU because of Cliff's work. So yeah, it's an interesting question because it's different from staff to staff and sport to sport, but that has provided a lot of potholes, you know, because those are hard to see old friends, you know, get cast aside.
Do you feel like that the new coaches seek you out in those moments?
No, actually I have to kind of find, the new coaches, incoming coaches. Yeah. No, because generally, they're going to be sort of bonded to the, athletic director and the two or three people in the administration who have gone through the hiring process with them. And so I kind of have to interject and at a very early stage and, you know, start arranging media stuff and getting the release pulled together and they're trying to figure out the lay of the land in their realm, you know, with the players and getting the staff pulled together and that sort of thing. And then they've got this, old guy that's been around forever bugging him about, you know, quotes for this and who are you going to hire for that and let me know. And so it's really more of a situation where I have to kind of interject myself into the way more important things that they're doing. So we, in order to get things managed on the media side of things and the communications, probably more the media, because at that point, a lot of what you're doing is pushing out information rather than, dealing with, well, you're doing both. You're pushing out information and you're dealing with people reaching out to try to access the coach. So it's a lot of both, but I think it's more, the SID has to sort of figure out a way to interject himself into the life of the head coach whose mind is going a million miles a minute.
Well, thanks for sharing that. There's got to be a lot of awkward stuff in your job, like you said, a lot of tough things you have to do. So thanks for kind of answering the question. Probably not a fun one to answer.
Oh, no, it's an interesting question because I hadn't really thought about that. You know, the easiest transition probably I've ever had is from Heisel to Kramer because Cliff, you know, pretty much left on his own terms, even though there were some health things and, you know, it was a tough thing for him. But when we hired Kramer, I'd known Kramer for a long time because Dan Davies in our building, you know, had been an assistant coach on the MSU and on Dave Arnold's staff with Kramer. So when we'd go over to Eastern, even before he was the head coach there, when he was on Dick Zorn's staff, you know, we'd socialize with Kramer. I remember one Friday we went out and played golf. So I knew Kramer fairly well before he got the MSU job. So that was, And talk about a guy I've stayed in touch with. He's just an all-time character. His daughter Courtney worked in my office a little bit when she was in school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're just such great people. So I've really enjoyed staying in touch with him the best I could and seeing him around, you know, when he was at Idaho State and that sort of thing.
Hey, Ryan, question for you. Better press conference, Mike Kramer or Jeff Choate?
Cool. He stumped me. I think I'm still go with Jeff Choate because I feel like Jeff gives us better content as far as information, but
entertainment value from Kramer is pretty high.
Yeah, entertainment value. Yeah.
I'll tell you guys a Kramer press conference story.
All right.
It was 2001 and we lost to Northern Arizona and I'm pretty sure it was homecoming. And I don't know. You guys were maybe in high school then. Is that right? Fall of 01?
No, we were both at Montana State.
Just, MSU. Just barely.
So we'd gotten, we got way behind and we came back. Tyler Thomas was the quarterback. Yeah. And we sort of screwed up a couple things late. And I think they scored late in the fourth quarter to beat us 35-28. And we get into the press conference and we did the press conferences then in the home team room, you know, the blockhouse at the stadium. And so what happened was Kramer got done with the team. He dismissed the team. I'd keep the couple of the players that we needed for interviews and the rest of them would leave. And while the players were filing out, I'd arranged the chairs. So there was a sort of a semicircle and there was one chair facing six or eight of them so people could ask questions. So I would stand generally behind the coach. And so Kramer starts in and I can always tell when he's getting on a roll and it's going in a bad direction. So he starts in on, you know, he's not going to take questions. He's going to make a statement. And he starts in on Tyler Thomas was 1 minute late for breakfast and that screwed up our whole. And so now I'm working my way around and I'm trying to give him the, you know, hand across the throat sign to say, bail out on this. And he would not look at me. And he kept going and going. And oh man, that was one of the most intense. And I was so trying to get him to, you know, to knock him out of that line of thought. But Krames, when he gets rolling downhill, man, there is no stopping him.
They wouldn't want to be on that side of the hill.
No.
So, Bill, you've had the privilege of covering, and I think Foley must have done this research here, 350 plus Bobcat football games.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, that probably me. I don't know how that makes you feel, but there's a number for you.
Old. I've missed one football game in my time here. It was the Sac State road game in 1994. They're transitioning to Division One, and then of course they joined the league 2 years later. But we played out there, and my best, you know, Dan Davies did radio then, as he still does, and my best friend in Nebraska was getting married, and I was in the wedding party. And so I took the golf team, happened to have a tournament in Lincoln that weekend. So I took the golf team to Lincoln and Dan did the game in Sacramento and flew back to Nebraska into Omaha. And then on Sunday I flew home. My wife and I flew home and we, I got to work on Sunday, but that's the only game I've missed in all these years.
Man, that's impressive. Kind of the question, would you have a favorite game of all those games?
Oh,
tough question.
It'd have to be that 0-2 Cat Grizz game, wouldn't it? Oh my God.
That has to be up there.
Oh, that was amazing. I'll tell you what though. One of my favorite games, and I bet you guys were both at this one, was the NAU game in 2003. You remember that?
Yeah.
We were, NAU scored, let's see, did they go up like 17-7?
I think Foley has this one down pretty good, don't you, Foley?
We talked with Travis Lule about this game, I believe.
Did you?
We did,
I'll tell you what I remember about it. I think we were down 17-7 with about, what was it, 2.5 minutes left. It was under 3 minutes, and Travis marched right down and scored. And I'm telling you, if you want to hear old timers howl about the prevent defense, man, show them that game because that will drive them nuts. So Travis drives them right down and scores. But what I remember is NAU must have scored with about, I don't know, 3 minutes left, maybe 2.5 minutes, whatever it was. And the people, you know, from my vantage point up in the press box, the whole east side of the stands just empties. and people are filing out. And I just remember looking at that thinking, oh, these people are going to be so mad when we come back and win this game. And if you knew me, you'd know that I never think like that. I am just a sports pessimist of all time. You know, I'm a Royals fan and Chiefs, and my teams just generally stink. So Milwaukee Bucks were so bad for so long. So I'm watching the stadium just empty, and we get the ball, and we must have scored in four or five plays. It was just not. I mean, it was like he was going on air. And so, you know, there's a minute left or so, and we recover the onside kick. And I remember, looking out at the stands, and the people as they were exiting just stopped. And they just, it's like time stood still for about 10 seconds. They just stopped and stood in their places. And then people turned around and started running back in. I'll never forget that as long as I live. That was just such a weird, cool scene. And of course we get the ball around the 50 and, you know, three, four plays and we score. And that was an amazing win, you know, by an amazing quarterback and really an amazing bunch of guys. I just love those 02, 03 guys.
That play, the onside kick, happened right in front of me. And I got this wrong with Travis Lule, but I believe I'm going to get it correct right now. I think Corey Smith was the guy that covered the ball right there on the 50.
Well, you could have anybody. I don't remember, but I do. Was it Corey? That's cool. Man, how amazing was he to watch?
Oof, right?
His senior season. I mean, when he was on the field, you just couldn't take your eyes off him. When he was back, for a punter, a kickoff. I mean, that I'm not sure we've ever had a guy more electrifying than him. And that opening kickoff of the 03 Cat Grizz game. Oh, jeez,
man, yeah, right?
I had to run downstairs to the to the fourth floor because Peter Fields was going to do an interview in the middle of the first quarter, and I had to run downstairs at the kickoff and remind him about that. So I ran down to the booth where he was. And I'll tell you, if you know the press box side, there's a thin internal stairway that goes from the fourth to the fifth floor. And I'm about halfway up and the building starts shaking. And I was thinking it's an earthquake or something. And then I turned the corner and then I could hear the roar. And I'm like, oh no, what did I miss?
Yeah.
And so I got back and I poked my head in the TV booth and then I could see what was going on. And I'll tell you what, Chris Atterbury's call of that touchdown, oh, it just gives me goosebumps every time I hear it.
Oh, that was one of the most memorable moments of Bobcat football in my entire life.
Oh, so. And then when Kenny Qualls intercepted that pass and ran it in, which was really, I mean, those two were the winning plays.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just amazing.
Is that Kenny Qualls? Is that the one he got flagged for front flipping into the end zone?
I think so. Yeah.
I remember being so upset about that. Like it's a rivalry game. He dives from the 1 yard line, nothing even too crazy. And they throw up.
Right.
Unsportsmanlike. I'm like, come on.
I think that's right. Yeah, but boy, he was a really good football player.
Bill, a little piece of history right here. Maybe not history, but just a little. We were talking about that Corey Smith taking him back to the house on that first play. Do you remember we missed the extra point on that?
Is that right? I don't remember that.
Oh man. So you talk about being a pessimist. I was like, okay, we're gonna miss the extra point. And of course we missed the extra point on it. I was like, oh my gosh, are you kidding?
Oh man, no, I'd gotten back up in time for that, but you know, my role on game days is you know, this whole conversation makes me think I can't believe I didn't mention Kay Nione for my Mount Rushmore. I mean, that guy's been such an amazing part of it. And his have you guys heard his recruiting story? So Kramer gets over to his house, Kramer and Pete Kwiatkowski, who is the defensive coordinator. And it's it's the winter of 99, 2000. So they're brand new on the job. And Pete says, whatever happens, don't offer him tonight. He says, we're not sure if he's good enough. Don't offer him. Kramer says, yep, I'm with you. So Pete sits down in the living room with Cass and Rhonda, and Mike and Kane go in the kitchen. And the first words out of Kramer's mouth are, "We got a full scholarship for you." And so he wasn't quite the first one, but he was one of the first two or three. And man, if one has ever worked out better than Kane I own for a program, I'd like to know about it. He's been an amazing guy. But no, I had forgotten about that PAT, and I think it's probably because I was trying to get, you know, the stats sorted out that was probably the second year we were using computer stats, and our inputter and so on were still new to it. So getting unusual situations like a kickoff return for a touchdown into the computer right was still a pretty big chore then.
Well, Bill, we know we're just looking at time and we don't want to keep you too long, but so we have one more question before we get into the buy or sell. And this pertains to this season. What kind of just information can you tell us about the upcoming football season?
Well, we're moving full steam ahead. You know, we're planning as if it's, I mean, I think the thing that makes it unusual, obviously, and this goes in every case of life, right? Whether you're talking about how, you know, my kid's getting a job, your kid's in school, whatever, is we just don't know. But we're trying to build models for as many scenarios as we can envision, from, you know, schedule being played as it is with full stadium to, you know, limited attendance to just, I mean, I'm not in on those conversations, but I'd have to say that every scenario I know for sure at the league level, that every scenario that can be imagined has been discussed. And I know that trickles down to the schools and you know, there's just a lot of time being spent on, you know, figuring out ways to deal with the different kind of things that might come up.
You might
not trying to dodge the question, but you know, it's, I guess the best answer is that, you know, we're planning on it as if there's going to be a season, but how the season looks is, you know, still pretty much anybody's guess.
Yeah.
Man, we could sit here and talk Bobcat football with you forever, Bill. It's been fun.
Oh, this is great, man. You're bringing back some great memories. You guys do some pretty impressive research. This is a lot of fun.
Right on. Well, we're going to move into the back end of our show now, our buy or sell questions. And anybody who follows you, Bill, on your socials, they know you are a baseball fan. You're a Kansas City Royals fan, the American League Central. And your buddy, Chris Atterbury, the long voice of the Bobcats, he is now play caller for the Twins, correct?
Yep, he is. Yep.
Do you, just before we get into this, do you keep in touch with him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We text back and forth, and he's started a podcast with Dean Alexander, the long ago play-by-play man for the Bobcats, who Chris actually replaced in 2002-03. So yeah, I keep in touch with Chris. He's just such a great, funny, really a smart guy. You know, as a Bozeman guy, he's got a good feel for the history of sort of this area, this place that even I don't have, because he grew up here in the 80s. So he was classmates with Brian Pepper, great Bobcat. So Chris is a good friend, and I really cherish every chance I get to catch up with him.
Yeah. It may be a good guy to get on the podcast for us too.
Yeah. There you go.
He would be tremendous.
All right. Bill, you are aware of the buy or sell game. I know we talked about this before we got on, and so we're going to get right into it. Basically, all you have to do is just give me a buy or sell based on how you feel, and just give us a little explanation. So question number one, Bill, buy or sell, it is okay to root for an American League and in a National League team.
I will buy that, because I grew up, my first favorite player, and it's before probably right about the time the Royals were coming into existence, was Willie Mays. So believe it or not, I've always been a Giants and Mets fan on the National League side. I've always kind of cheered for those two teams, but really I kind of have good feelings about a lot of the National League teams other than the damn Dodgers. I don't like those guys, but I do like the National League or the Cardinals. Can't stand the Cardinals. But
attaboy.
Yeah, I do like the National League teams, but you know, the home is where the heart is, right? So I'll always live and die with the Royals.
Okay, cool. And you asked my sub question to that, which is who is your National League team? So
I don't follow them real close, but I kind of always keep an eye on them a little bit. But you know, since going back to your last question, since Chris has been with the Twins, and I've got one of my best friends that I grew up with lives in Minneapolis, and he works for the Lynx and the Timberwolves. So I've kind of followed the Twins, and I both of my wife's brothers are Twins fans. They're from Minnesota, so I kind of follow the Twins too. And since the Royals had those two great years, I can live with another American League Central team, having a great season if it happens.
There you go. You're a good sport, Bill.
That's right. I'm mellowing out in my old age.
All right. So bye. There we go. All right. Sticking with baseball. Number two, buy or sell. National League should adopt the designated hitter.
Bye. Bye, 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 bye. I'm a DH guy. And I'll tell you why, because, you know, everybody tells you the strategy of the National League. Come on, man. I was doing double switches on, playing board games and managing little league teams in the 70s. Give me a break. If Don Zimmer can make a double switch, it's not that hard. So what I appreciate and I enjoy watching is on the American League side, pitching, because it's much more difficult. You know, on the National League side, you're going to get to a point in the game where you're going to pinch hit for your pitcher, right? So there's no strategy there. Your guy's running out of gas, you pinch hit for him. And I don't need to see a guy hit 075 in the 9 hole. Come on. So I like the very subtle strategy in the American League side of having to watch and actually figure out if a pitcher's running out of gas and manage the bullpen that way and, you know, manage a lineup. If you're going to pinch hit based on things that aren't as obvious of just, the pitcher spot's coming up. So I'm buying.
I'm like 180% opposite of you on that. I like pitchers who rake.
So many people are. Hey, I will tell you this. I love, Madison Bumgarner, Zach Greinke. I do love watching good hitting pitchers, but
yeah,
if they left it the way it is, I'd be fine with that. But, I saw on Twitter the other day, somebody tweeted that they wish the National League would keep the pitchers batting. So he still had something to make fun of NL fans about. So I'm kind of there on that too.
I always got a little salty when I have pitchers on my fantasy team and they hit a home run and it doesn't count for me, for my stats. And that's basically right. Right on. Okay. Moving on. Buy or sell. Number three, buy or sell, Bill, listening to a well-called game is better than watching it on TV.
Oh, I so buy. How did you know I was going to say bye to that? I just love radio broadcasters. It was one of my childhood things that, I wanted to be the play-by-play guy for the Royals. And their play-by-play guy has been, it's the same guy from the beginning, 1969, Denny Matthews. And I have listened to him. I've got a thing where when they were good for those 3 or 4 years, and they're winning the pennant in 14 and 15, when it really looked bad, when I thought they were going to lose an important game or an elimination game or whatever, I'd always turn on Denny and listen to him because I just, if I was going down, I wanted to go down with Denny, who has been with me from the beginning. So yeah, I love radio calls of games, and it's been such a great thrill to be around Dean Alexander and Chris and the guy at Wyoming who I still listen to, the radio pair is Dave Walsh, who's just absolutely tremendous, and Kevin McKinney, my old boss. So I do, man. I buy that. I love radio calls of games. Love them.
Yeah, me too. I'm a big Marty Brenneman fan, and he's not announcing the Reds games this year. This is his first year of retirement. But
is that right? Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Right?
Well,
we can go down that rabbit hole sometime later.
I'm old enough to have listened to Joe Nuxhall, the old left-hander around in third and heading for home. Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. Got a big smile on my face right now. Goodbye right there. Okay. Two more buy or sells. Number four, some MSU stuff right now. Okay. A buy or sell, Bill. Football wins a national championship before men's basketball makes it to the NCAA tourney.
Oh, I'll tell you what. I think I'll sell that one. And it's not because I don't believe football's heading in the right direction. It's just that's a hard tournament to get through. I mean, it's really hard. And you know how much a game football is that, you know, there's so much randomness in a football game, right? The ball bounces funny on one play. And and I really do believe that Danny's going to get the Bobcat basketball team rolling here pretty good pretty soon. So, and you know, so you're talking about getting through three or four days in a weekend, getting hot for three or four days in a weekend if you have a pretty good team versus having to survive that football tournament. I'll give a very soft sell on that one, but I really think that, you know, we've got a formula right now to make to make continual deep runs in the fall tournament. And that's the way to win a championship, right? If you just keep getting into it and getting deep, you know, something good will happen. So I'm not saying I don't think we'll win one, because I really think we can, but I think Danny might get us back to that NCAA tournament here pretty soon.
I certainly hope so. It's been too long since the Bobcats were, you know, sniffing the NCAA tournament. So I'm really excited to see where Sprinkle's taking the program.
Yeah, I really like the direction he's heading. I think he's recruiting really well, and I think the plan he's got in place is really a sound one.
All right. So the next two questions,
this is the last one, Thorny.
What?
No, I think so. Right.
I got two questions I'm going to ask.
Okay. All right. Cool.
you commented one on the
there
thing.
It is. Yeah. Never mind. Okay. I got it. I see it.
All right. So my question is: buy or sell? You know more about Bobcat football than Dan Davies.
Oh, sell. Oh, no way. No, that guy. I mean, he was at that great 68 game when Paul Schaefer ran for all those yards over in Dornblazer. No, no, no. Davies is the man. Now, he might not be able to, he and I both maybe not be, might be able to put our fingers on stuff right away, but no, he's got me whipped for sure. Mm. Yeah, and he's, you know, all those years, he's so wired in with those 70s guys that he played with and then those 80s guys that he coached with. It's fun to see, because a lot of those guys roll through the building to say hi to Dan when they're back in town. And so he's amazing. He's a wonderful resource. And I think anybody in my position is blessed to have him in the building. So that's a hard sell.
Well, between the two of you, I don't think there's a Bobcat question in the last a long time that you guys couldn't answer between the two of you.
I'd start with him.
Fair enough. All right. My last question is, I try to end these with kind of a weird question. I know you're a Wyoming guy. Buy or sell Chugwater chili?
Oh, it's so good. That stuff's really good. That stuff's really good. I'll tell you what, Chugwater chili and Taco John's being born in the town I was born in and getting its feet underneath it in Torrington, which was my first hometown. My mom and dad owned a motel there. That's a pretty good go-to pair right there on the eastern side of the state. No, Chugwater chili's good. Have you guys ever tried that?
Funny story. I took a road trip when I was in college down to Colorado for some random computer parts blowout sale when I was in a computer science program. Complete waste. There was no good deals, but it was a road trip. And we were driving through Wyoming, and that's pretty much the only time I've been through either direction. And we're like, Chugwater chili. I'll see all these signs, like, try Chugwater chili. All right, we'll try it. And we tried it. I was like, yeah, it's all right.
Yeah. No, it's you buy the mix and you take it home, and oh, I love that stuff. Yeah, I like it. I'm a hard buy on that.
Well, I'm a hard buy on Taco John's. I miss it out here in Washington.
Oh, I love Taco John's, man. We had one in my hometown, and me and my dad would go there on Saturdays a lot. Yeah, that's good stuff. Good stuff.
Well, on that fun Taco John's note, let's go ahead and close this out of the podcast. Bill, you want to tell our listeners where they might be able to follow you?
At B Lamberty on Twitter, and, you know, check MSUBobcats.com. We try to keep fresh stuff up there all the time.
I appreciate you coming on, Bill. It was a lot of fun. Thanks for coming on and humoring us on some of these questions and, you know, just giving us a piece of what you do and kind of behind the curtains on what a SID does. It was really fun.
Oh, it's been a blast. This is fun. Talking about some of those old games when that we were at together and didn't even know it. Yeah, that's a blast, man. I had a lot of fun. And anytime you need me for anything, just let me know.
Well, next time we're in Bozeman, we'll at least have to maybe try and get some pizza. Huh?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, let's do it. Columbus.
Oh, man, I miss Columbus. Now you're bringing me back. We've been away from Bozeman too long.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, Bobcat fans, you can follow us on Twitter, RRCatCast. You can always find us on the Bobcat Nation under our recurring thread. We're working on a website soon. Maybe I'll drop an announcement here. Working on that soon. And Bill, we always end our podcast with a Go Cats. So can I get a Go Cats?
Go Cats.
Go Cats.
Go Cats.